The fact of life. All complex life on Earth has developed from simpler life forms over billions of years. This is a fact that no longer admits of intelligent dispute. If you doubt that human beings evolved from prior species, you may as well doubt that the sun is a star. Granted, the sun doesn't seem like an ordinary star, but we know that it is a star that just happens to be relatively close to the Earth. Imagine your potential for embarrassment if your religious faith rested on the presumption that the sun was not a star at all. Imagine millions of Christians in the United States spending hundreds of millions of dollars each year to battle the godless astronomers and astrophysicists on this point. Imagine them working passionately to get their unfounded notions about the sun taught in our nation's schools. This is exactly the situation you are now in with respect to evolution. Christians who doubt the truth of evolution are apt to say things like, "Evolution is just a theory, not a fact." Such statements betray a serious misunderstanding of the way the term theory is used in scientific discourse. In science, facts must be explained with reference to other facts. These larger explanatory models are theories. Theories make predictions and can, in principle, be tested. The phrase, the theory of evolution, does not in the least suggest that evolution is not a fact. One can speak about the germ theory of disease, or the theory of gravitation, without casting doubt upon disease or gravity as facts of nature. It is also worth noting that one can obtain a PhD in any branch of science for no other purpose than to make cynical use of scientific language in an effort to rationalize the glaring inadequacies of the Bible. A handful of Christians appear to have done this. Some have even obtained their degrees from reputable universities. No doubt others will follow in their footsteps. While such people are technically scientists, they are not behaving like scientists. They simply are not engaged in an honest inquiry into the nature of the universe, and their proclamations about God and the failures of Darwinism do not in the least signify that there is a legitimate scientific controversy about evolution. In 2005, a survey was conducted in 34 countries measuring the percentage of adults who accept evolution. The United States ranked 33rd, just above Turkey. Meanwhile, high school students in the United States test below those of every European and Asian nation in their understanding of science and math. These data are unequivocal. We are building a civilization of ignorance. Here is what we know. We know that the universe is far older than the Bible suggests. We know that all complex organisms on Earth, including ourselves, evolved from earlier organisms over the course of billions of years. The evidence for this is utterly overwhelming. There is no question that the diverse life we see around us is the expression of a genetic code written in the molecule DNA, that DNA undergoes chance mutations, and that some mutations increase an organism's odds of surviving and reproducing in a given environment. This process of mutation and natural selection has allowed isolated populations of individuals to interbreed and over vast stretches of time form new species. There is no question that human beings evolved from non-human ancestors in this way. We know from genetic evidence that we share an ancestor with apes and monkeys, and that this ancestor in turn shared an ancestor with the bats and the flying lemurs. There is a widely branching tree of life whose basic shape and character is now very well understood. Consequently, there is no reason whatsoever to believe that individual species were created in their present forms. How the process of evolution got started is still a mystery, but that does not in the least suggest that a deity is likely to be lurking at the bottom of it all. Any honest reading of the biblical account of creation suggests that God created all animals and plants as we now see them. There is no question that the Bible is wrong about this. Many Christians who want to cast doubt upon the truth of evolution now advocate something called intelligent design, or ID. The problem with ID is that it is nothing more than a program of political and religious advocacy masquerading as science. Since a belief in the biblical God finds no support in our growing scientific understanding of the world, ID theorists invariably stake their claim on the areas of scientific ignorance. The argument for ID has proceeded on many fronts at once. Like countless theists before them, fanciers of ID regularly argue that the very fact that the universe exists proves the existence of God. The argument runs more or less like this. Everything that exists has a cause. Space and time exist. Space and time must, therefore, have been caused by something that stands outside of space and time. And the only thing that transcends space and time, and yet retains the power to create, is God. Many Christians like yourself find this argument compelling. And yet, even if we granted its primary claims, each of which requires much more discussion than ID theorists ever acknowledge, the final conclusion does not follow. Who is to say that the only thing that could give rise to space and time is a supreme being? Even if we accepted that our universe simply had to be designed by a designer, this would not suggest that this designer is the biblical God, or that he approves of Christianity. If intelligently designed, our universe could be running as a simulation on an alien supercomputer, or it could be the work of an evil god, or of two such gods playing tug-of-war with the larger cosmos. As many critics of religion have pointed out, the notion of a creator poses an immediate problem of an infinite regress. If God created the universe, what created God? To say that God, by definition, is uncreated simply begs the question. Any being capable of creating a complex world promises to be very complex himself. As the biologist Richard Dawkins has observed repeatedly, the only natural process we know of that could produce a being capable of designing things is evolution. The truth is that no one knows how or why the universe came into being. It is not clear that we can even speak coherently about the creation of the universe, given that such an event can be conceived only with reference to time. And here we are talking about the birth of space-time itself. The physicist Stephen Hawking, for instance, pictures space-time as a four-dimensional closed manifold, without beginning or end, much like the surface of a sphere. Any intellectually honest person will admit that he does not know why the universe exists. Scientists, of course, readily admit their ignorance on this point. Religious believers do not. One of the monumental ironies of religious discourse can be appreciated in the frequency with which people of faith praise themselves for their humility, while condemning scientists and other non-believers for their intellectual arrogance. There is, in fact, no worldview more reprehensible in its arrogance than that of a religious believer. The creator of the universe takes an interest in me, approves of me, loves me, and will reward me after death. My current beliefs, drawn from Scripture, will remain the best statement of the truth until the end of the world. Everyone who disagrees with me will spend eternity in hell. An average Christian in an average church, listening to an average Sunday sermon, has achieved a level of arrogance simply unimaginable in scientific discourse. And there have been some extraordinarily arrogant scientists. Over 99% of the species that ever walked, flew, or slithered upon this earth are now extinct. This fact alone appears to rule out intelligent design. When we look at the natural world, we see extraordinary complexity, but we do not see optimal design. We see redundancy, regressions, and unnecessary complications. We see bewildering inefficiencies that result in suffering and death. We see flightless birds and snakes with pelvises. We see species of fish, salamanders, and crustaceans that have non-functional eyes because they continue to evolve in darkness for millions of years. We see whales that produce teeth during fetal development, only to reabsorb them as adults. Such features of our world are utterly mysterious if God created all species of life on Earth intelligently. None of them are perplexing in light of evolution. The biologist J.B.S. Haldane is reported to have said that if there is a God, he has an inordinate fondness for beetles. One would have hoped that an observation this devastating would have closed the book on creationism for all time. The truth is that while there are now around 350,000 known species of beetles, God appears to have an even greater fondness for viruses. Biologists estimate that there are at least 10 strains of virus for every species of animal on Earth. Many viruses are benign, of course. And some ancient virus may have played an important role in the emergence of complex organisms. But viruses tend to use organisms like you and me as their borrowed genitalia. Many of them invade our cells only to destroy them, destroying us in the process, horribly, mercilessly, relentlessly. Viruses like HIV, as well as a wide range of harmful bacteria, can be seen evolving right under our noses, developing resistance to antiviral and antibiotic drugs to the detriment of everyone. Evolution both predicts and explains this phenomenon. The book of Genesis does not. How can you imagine that religious faith offers the best account of these realities? Or that they suggest some deeper, compassionate purpose of an omniscient being? Our own bodies testify to the whimsy and incompetence of the Creator. As embryos, we produce tails, gill sacs, and a full coat of ape-like hair. Happily, most of us lose these charming accessories before birth. This bizarre sequence of morphology is readily interpreted in evolutionary and genetic terms. It is an utter mystery if we are the products of intelligent design. Men have a urinary tract that runs directly through the prostate gland. The prostate tends to swell throughout life. Consequently, most men over the age of 60 can testify that at least one design on God's green earth leaves much to be desired. A woman's pelvis has not been as intelligently designed as it could have been to assist in the miracle of birth. Consequently, each year, hundreds of thousands of women suffer prolonged and obstructed labor that results in a rupture known as an obstetric fistula. Women in the developing world who suffer this condition become incontinent and are often abandoned by their husbands and exiled from their communities. The United Nations Population Fund estimates that more than 2 million women live with fistula today. The cure for obstetric fistula is, as it turns out, a simple surgical procedure, not prayer. While many people of faith seem convinced that prayer can heal a wide variety of illnesses, despite what the best scientific research indicates, it is curious that prayer is only ever believed to work for illnesses and injuries that can be self-limiting. No one, for instance, ever seriously expects that prayer will cause an amputee to regrow a missing limb. Why not? Salamanders manage this routinely, presumably without prayer. If God answers prayers, ever, why wouldn't he occasionally heal a deserving amputee? And why wouldn't people of faith expect prayer to work in such cases? There is a very clever website devoted to exploring this very mystery, www.whydoesgodhateamputees.com. Examples of unintelligent design in nature are so numerous that an entire book could be written simply listing them. I will permit myself just one more example. The human respiratory and digestive tracts share a little plumbing at the pharynx. In the United States alone, this intelligent design feature lands tens of thousands of children in the emergency room each year. Some hundreds choke to death. Many others suffer irreparable brain injury. What compassionate purpose does this serve? Of course, we can imagine a compassionate purpose. Perhaps the parents of these children needed to be taught a lesson. Perhaps God has prepared a special reward in heaven for every child who chokes to death on a bottle cap. The problem, however, is that such imaginings are compatible with any state of the world. What horrendous mishap could not be rationalized in this way? And why would you be inclined to think like this? How is it moral to think like this?